The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Eris Nix and Jeremy Callicum are members of the Drug Users Liberation Front in Vancouver, British Columbia. I spoke with them recently about safe supply and about International Overdose Awareness Day, which is August 31st. We're going to hear part of that interview later on the show. But first, three cities in Canada so far are moving to decriminalize simple personal use possession of most drugs. Vancouver submitted its proposal to Health Canada back in May of this year, asking for an exemption from the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act. According to the City of Vancouver's website, if granted, quote, this exemption would mean that people found in possession of controlled substances under a certain threshold amount within municipal boundaries would not be subject to criminal sanctions. Instead, people would be offered to voluntarily be connected with services, and their substances for personal use and paraphernalia would not be confiscated. The submission complements local and provincial investments in safe supply, overdose prevention and harm reduction, treatment, outreach, housing, and Indigenous healing and wellness. End quote. The other two cities are in the province of Saskatchewan. On August 31st, International Overdose Awareness Day, Councillor Andrew Stevens will present his decriminalization motion to the Board of Police Commissioners for the City of Regina. Regina is the capital of that province. The largest city in Saskatchewan is Saskatoon. A motion to decriminalize was introduced to Saskatoon's Board of Police Commissioners on August 19th. Here's Commissioner Carney Healy, QC.
Yes, thank you, Chair Constant. Yes, I would like to make the motion that I had earlier indicated in June 17th that I would be presenting at today's meeting. I believe that it's an important opportunity for our community to engage in the process of becoming a safer community. I think that it's appropriate that I read the motion, and it largely covers the evidence that's important on this thing. So please bear with me while I read the actual motion. Whereas the Saskatoon Board of Police Commissioners, hereafter referred to as the SBPC, mission statement is to strengthen the culture of community safety. And whereas the illicit drug crisis, including the opioid crisis in Saskatoon, has resulted in far too many deaths so far, and all evidence points to even more deaths in the future. Moreover, the opioid crisis is a national problem, as recognized by the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, CACP, who collectively issued a report titled Decriminalization for Simple Possession of Illicit Drugs in July 2020. This report will hereafter be referred to as CACP, and the page number of the report, where the quote was taken from. Whereas each person's death is a tragedy and negatively affects family, friends, neighbors, and our community, and the sense of community efficacy and safety. Whereas the opioid crisis is fueled by an immoral trade focused solely on profitability and avoiding regulation, police, and safety concerns, creating hard-to-control drug supplies, which result in often toxic products that no consumer can guard against because the suppliers slash manufacturers have a monopoly. With the increased use of fentanyl and carfentanil, and now more recently the addition of benzodiazepines, all of which increase the difficulty of appropriate regulation and, thus, more profit, means that their products are even more deadly. So much so that naloxone is ineffective when the mixture includes benzodiazepines and, therefore, even more deaths. Whereas by reducing the reliance on the illegal trade through measures such as decriminalization of simple possession of illicit drugs, offering effective health-based alternatives, supervised consumption sites, and a safe supply, Saskatoon can, quote, make positive impacts in communities, reducing recidivism, reducing ancillary crimes for individuals who use drugs. That quote is from the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police, pages 2 and 3. The CACP lists such crimes as, quote, thefts, break and enters, and robberies to support drug habits. That's at the CACP report at page 11, as well as, quote, decrease in the number of calls for services for police to drug-related incidents, end quote, CACP, page 12. Whereas the evidence in Canada and internationally has led the CACP to state at page 3, quote, the compelling case for transformative change in Canada has been made by public health officials regarding how we respond to people experiencing a substance abuse disorder. The current Canadian context is marked by an opioid crisis, with deaths due to opioid overdose reaching unprecedented levels, end quote. Whereas decriminalization of possession is increasingly being explored as an approach to break the cycle of addiction and harm caused by this crisis, many examples of decriminalization already exist in Canada. For example, safe supervised consumption sites, police decisions not to arrest people in or near them, the Good Samaritan Drug Overdose Act of Canada, localized diversion programs, prescription opioids, and programs in Vancouver and Ottawa that offer a safe supply. These are referenced at the CACP at page 4 and following, and at page 10. Decriminalization is already in Canada and shows a path forward. Indeed, quote, if decriminalization of the possession of illicit drugs occurred in Canada, it doesn't necessarily require existing legislation to be repealed, end quote. That's the CACP at page 14. The evidence is there are many effective pathways once we accept the CACP, who state at page 2, quote, we recognize substance abuse disorder as a public health issue. Whereas in September 2018, the Canadian federal government, quote, made a commitment to explore options for safer alternatives to the contaminated drug supply, CACP at page 9. And whereas in June 2019, the House of Commons Standing Committee recommended that the Government of Canada work with all levels of government and law enforcement agencies to decriminalize simple possession of small amounts of illicit substances, the CACP again at page 4, whereas the CACP concluded at page 14, quote, merely arresting individuals for simple possession of illicit drugs has proven to be ineffective. Finding pathways of care and support for individuals with problematic substance abuse is critical to reducing overdose deaths. Health is best positioned to address problematic substance abuse and not the police. To repeat, that's from the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police. Whereas the Saskatoon Board of Police Commission recognizes, applauds, and thanks both the Saskatoon Police Service for the strategic partnerships with community agencies and healthcare providers to address addictions in our community, including those agencies using a harm reduction approach. And whereas the Saskatoon Board of Police Commissioners recognizes the outpouring of community support for harm reduction in recent months to address the overdose crisis and its impact on families and neighborhoods here, the Saskatoon Board of Police Commissioner recognizes that as circumstances have put the Saskatoon Police Service into the position of normally being the first responder in many situations, we as a community must ensure that the second response be the next possible next step possible, the best next step possible. Therefore, the Saskatoon Board of Police Commissioners that requests that the Saskatoon Police Service report back to the Saskatoon Board of Police Commissioners on 1. Evidence-based approaches to expanded harm reduction in other jurisdictions that could include decriminalization, safe supply, and increased diversion of drug-related charges that could provide further lessons for addressing this crisis in Saskatoon, and what role police services and police boards play in this discussion relative to provincial ministries of health and medical health officers, justice ministries, municipal governments, and other partners. We ask that the report include what resources we might request from our federal government and attendant civil service. You'll note their commitments referenced above. Our provincial government and attendant civil services, our Indigenous governments, our civic government, as well as what resources might be provided by the people of Saskatoon, whether as individuals or as organized in many forms. We ask for this in accordance with our mission to strengthen the culture of community safety. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that the motion speaks for itself. It is essentially a request for an investigation by the police and a report back to us when the time is appropriate, when the police have finished doing their search into these topics, to look for a way where we could start to move this item forward, that we look for a solution to the illicit drug crisis, and that the solution takes on all the many forms that would be useful and helpful and will bring us to a much better situation than we are in right now.
That was Commissioner Carney Healy, QC. He's a member of the Saskatoon Board of Police Commissioners. On August 19th, he introduced a motion to decriminalize simple possession of drugs. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now, as promised, here's part of my interview with Aris Nix and Jeremy Callicum. They're with the Drug Users Liberation Front in Vancouver, British Columbia. Parts of this interview previously aired on Free Culture Radio, which is another radio show that I host and produce.
My name's Jeremy Callicum. I'm an organizer with the Drug User Liberation Front.
Hey, my name's Aris Nix. I'm also an organizer with the Drug User Liberation Front.
Tell me about the Drug User Liberation Front.
Yeah, Drug User Liberation Front is an unincorporated coalition of drug user groups, academics, community advocacy groups, and individuals. And our mission is to provide tangible responses to the overdose crisis in BC and Canada. And primarily that means getting safe supply to people and making it a reality.
I think to add more background to that, in British Columbia over the last 5 years, we've had very extreme rates of death with the, you know, last year's numbers being close to 2,000 people passing away from opiate overdoses. So the work we're doing is kind of, I guess you could say, designed to prevent these very, very preventable deaths. But, you know, as Jeremy said, offering people drugs with a predictable and labeled content. I think that's our key understanding of how to stop all the death, to change the regime that is harming so many people, which is prohibition.
So tell me about Safe Supply. Talk to me about that.
I mean, okay, I will. Ostensibly, I think the issue, you know, I like to make this allegory with liquor regulation. When you have deregulated, you know, liquor, when you have prohibitionist policy against liquor or alcohol, it caused three things in the illicit market. It caused the potency of the alcohol to increase because it was easier to smuggle. It provided funds to organize crime. And it caused, you know, toxicity from alcohol poisoning, whether that was from methanol or whatever was in the moonshine supply, to increase dramatically. And it's the same thing with illicit drugs. So our drug laws, you know, they do not stem from any kind of like medical science. They stem from colonial racist policy. And in Canada specifically, you know, laws against opiates were first used as a prohibition against Chinese folks coming into British Columbia, even more specifically, you know, which was soon followed by, you know, prohibitions against Black and Brown folks through the, you know, barring of the use of cocaine and marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. So there's really no scientific basis to our drug laws. And what's happened, you know, recently is that the toxicity from a deregulated market has gotten so out of control. The content of drugs have become so unpredictable that at any time you use illicit street drugs, you're at risk of death. So this idea of Safe Supply, you know, is grounded in the understanding that people are going to use drugs anyway, and that they should have access to drugs with a predictable, you know, regulated content, much like alcohol, you know. And in my ideal world, you have liquor stores that just sell narcotics. Alcohol is the most dangerous drug, you know, both to the individual and to society, according to most scientific research. So it's ridiculous that it's sold and controlled while all these other drugs are, you know, social no-nos, if you will.
Now, am I right that the province did attempt to put together its own kind of Safe Supply thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm on that program. I like to call it, I can't believe it's not Safe Supply. So ostensibly, if you're using illicit narcotics, you can go to your doctor. Assuming you have a prescribing doctor and a pharmacist that'll fill the prescription, you can get what's called replacement therapy. So for instance, if I go to my doctor and I'm like, I'm using street methamphetamine, they'll give me a prescription for dexedrine under these guidelines, right? However, I'm like, if I want to use cocaine, there's no prescription cocaine. If I want to smoke methamphetamine, I can't, you know, smoke these dexedrine pills. So there's like very severe limitations. Plus the fact that you have to get integrated into a medicalized system, you know, where you get a mental health diagnosis of having a substance use disorder, which Lord knows what that'll do further down the line. So really, you know, the systems they're creating are, you know, panopticonical extensions of the prison industrial complex. And that's why they're not working, because people who use drugs, you know, 99% of folks who use drugs don't have chaotic patterns of use. And these, I can't believe it's not Safe Supply programs, are designed, they're like managed alcohol programs or something. They're designed for folks who are having, you know, struggling with the way they're using drugs, which is not going to work for the vast majority of people. I think like the thing to know is, I'm like, you can go into a liquor store and buy 40 liters of liquor, you know, enough to kill a human being if you drank it all, let alone like, you know, put it in your or like some other route of administration that would get you drunk way faster. So, you know, you have this fatal drug that's being sold in regular. I'm like, do the same thing with drugs to prevent the death and the criminal contingents from making so much money and all the blah, 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 blah. You know, the problem is, I think the war on drugs more generally is such a linchpin of the way our society operates that once you start poking the bear, you know, you're kind of playing Kerplunk and just pulling sticks out until all the marbles fall down. And it's not a pleasant, like me and Jeremy, I think like initially we were more afraid of arrest than we are right now, but definitely it's something always in the back of our minds that like what we're doing is not, it's not legal. So, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, if you want to do a specific drug, you're going to go out and get that drug. And if you're going to go out and get that drug, you should not, that shouldn't be like a life or death decision. You know, I think our society in a very Republican sense should be past the point where if someone wants to do a little cocaine or something, they're not risking their life to have, you know, fun. It's pretty preposterous.
Yeah, I think it's important not to get lost in the semantics of, you know, safer supply, safe supply. I mean, just making it a reality. And the reality is if people can't get drugs that they want and know what's in it, it's not safe supply. So if they can't access it through, you know, barriers of medicalization, then it's not safe supply. If it's not what they want and it's not what they're going to use, then it's not safe supply.
As I mentioned, the event in July, because it made international news. I mean, you actually did you handed out safe supply in front of the Vancouver Police Department.
We did do that with the city councilor, yes.
Yeah, so we did that with city councilor Jean Swanson, who's, you know, a city of Vancouver city councilor. She ran on a platform of being an activist, caring for the people, wants to get things done. She donates everything she makes as a city councilor above, you know, a working person's wage to important causes. So she had donated to the Drug User Liberation Front in the past. And as we were working on this event, we're like, you know, I think Jean would do this. Like, from what I know about Jean, she would hop right on this because she cares about people and she knows what's right and what's wrong. So we emailed her and we explained to her what we were doing, why it was safe, how would we be doing it. And she's like, yeah, I'm in. Let's do it. And that's the story. She showed up, she did it, she made sure things were safe. And
yeah, I think at the end of the day, we knew we're a very like optically oriented institution. So I think a lot of what we do and what we think is important kind of stems from how much of a stir we can create in the public's eye. And I think handing out police, you know, drugs in front of the police station is going to make international news. So in that regard, it was a very like planned action, you know, it takes from like the situationist movement or whatever.
What do you have planned next?
I mean, we're doing an action. So August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day. I don't think there's going to be as much of a farce, you know, to this kind of event as the last one. We're not doing anything crazy like going into City Hall and handing out drugs, but we are showing that our model, we can expand it. So we're giving drugs to one of the drug user groups in every health authority in the province. So folks in, not just in Vancouver, but all over the province will receive Dolph Safe Supply, which I think will be interesting. We're also collaborating with a group called Moms Stop the Harm, who are mothers who have lost children to the crisis of prohibition. And we will be doing a large giveaway of drugs from Vandu in Vancouver in the afternoon on the 31st, which will be followed by a live stream, which everyone can tune into. More information about that will be available soon, probably midweek on Dolph's website, www.dolph.ca, D-U-L-F.ca. And that live stream will showcase some musical talent from our community, as well as be like a celebration of our resilience in the face of this monstrous genocide against people who use drugs. So it'll be a fun day, but there won't be, you know, maybe not necessarily the kind of shenanigans people expect from us after the last event. You know, really, at the end of the day, I'm like, we don't need to keep doing that if we're pushing the dialogue forward. And I think the important thing is to, you know, neither of us want to be famous for what we're doing. Yeah, as Jeremy kept saying, it's like a circumstantial thing. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, what's important to us is that people stop dying. You know, so as long as we have that, we don't really care if we're in the news or not. So that, you know, we're moving to sit down with the government to try and get, you know, an exemption for our kind of like market intervention. But ostensibly, what we want them to do is be like, Dolph as an institution can test, relabel, and redistribute drugs without legal penalty. You know, we're not trying to make money, obviously. We're not criminals. We're not drug dealers. We wouldn't sell them for a profit, but just that kind of market intervention, I think, could save a lot of lives. You know, and continuing this free drug program, I mean, that's always good.
Do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners?
I think it's anyone can do this if they have the resources. Our model is very horizontal in terms of accessibility. I mean, you need to know basic things about accessing the dark web, blah, blah, blah. But anyone could be purchasing drugs. And if you have, you know, I feel like this is more difficult for folks in the States, but if you have access to spectrographic testing, you could do what Dolph is doing in your community, you know. So, to anyone out there that's listening, that's like, why don't we have this here? Like, it's very much, you know, you got to bootstrap it and do it yourself and not be afraid of the police. Because when you're on the right side of history, it's, you know, it's hard to be vilified. Let's put it that way, right? So for anyone else that's struggling with the death caused by the regime of prohibition, the global regime of prohibition, know that, you know, we stand with you in solidarity and all power to the drug users.
What question have I not asked that I should?
Oh, there's one bone I'd really like to pick. And it's with Reddit World News. So r/World News. On our last action, we had Vancouver's Awesome Rated article that, you know, really caught fire online and went what I would call viral. And it was, you know, at the top of the kind of news tab on Reddit. And then the moderators of r/World News removed it once it hit the top. So I think that's really, kind of bad faith moderating. So, you know, we're really kind of working uphill. It's a grind to get the word out there because these things happen.
Tell me again the website and also what's your social media handles so people can follow that event and other stuff that you're doing.
Sure. It's dulf.ca, dulf.ca. We have a Facebook. I think it's DulfBC, but if you look up Drug User Liberation Front on Facebook, it'll come up. Our Instagram is at, wait, I don't know the Instagram. Our Twitter is at DolphBC and Aristos Instagram.
Most of the Instagram stuff we do run through Coalition of Peers, so at CPDDW Vancouver. Dolph does not have its own Instagram account. They kind of share.
And we also have a Reddit, and it's DolphBC. We may do an Ask Me Anything one day.
Jeremy, Aris, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything you're doing, and thank you for all your time. That was part of my conversation with Aris Nix and Jeremy Callicum with the Drug Users Liberation Front in Vancouver, British Columbia. Once again, International Overdose Awareness Day is August 31st. And for now, folks, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is produced for the Drug Truth Network and distributed by the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network. Please, support your local community and public radio stations. Become a member today. You can find this edition of Century of Lies, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. There's a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. You can follow me on Twitter, I'm at Doug McVeigh, and of course also at Drug Policy Facts. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.